the summertime in the city, when the girls are all so pretty. In the summer in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down in the summer in the city, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables tended by vendors on the side of the street making a living. In the summer in the city, when the girls are so pretty, the heat and temperature is rising much faster than your spine can contemplate all the implications upon you now. The summer, the city, things are heating up. In the summer, in the city, you have a half full cup. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when those girls are so pretty.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The very first show of 2014. And boy, what a broadcast we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We're with the lady, none other than Dr. Rima Labo, the girl who puts the labels on the rainbows. That's why they call her Labo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Vinny. That's exactly why they named my grandmother that, because they knew that she would have my father, who would have me, and I would need that name.
It's pretty obvious.
How clever of you to know that.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Now, you've got a little bit of information to share with us about what's happening in Chile at the moment. Pray tell.
I do. As many people who have been following us at www.drrimatruthreports.com, drrimatruthreports.com, already know, the Natural Solutions Foundation is unafraid to name problems, call them exactly what they are, and then committed to finding solutions that enhance our ability to live our lives well and jubilantly and healthily, and essentially turn the globalist, depopulationist, enslavement agenda on its head, or more preferably, its rear end. So when Fukushima Daiichi was engineered or occurred without pre-planning, take your pick, when that happened, I realized that there would never again be clean food in the northern part of this planet, low radiation, organic, chemical-free food. And so, because I am an environmental physician as well as a psychiatrist, I talked to the other trustees of the foundation, the Natural Solutions Foundation. Solutions are a middle name, after all. And we decided that we would find the best place on the planet to create a major food supply from. And that turned out to be Chile. So General Burt, who is the president of the foundation, and I moved to Chile because we do whatever the foundation needs, and it needed us to go here. So we moved to this country. We don't speak Spanish. And we knew that we'd find absolutely incredible food and tremendous diversity, but we had no idea we would find such a pleasant place to live. That's kind of a perquisite. And so we are getting very, very close to to being able to bring this food to the people in North America. And today, I just had a phone call, completely unexpected, from someone who is very much involved in biodynamic farming and wants to bring our beautiful low radiation organic food to Europe as well, because let's not forget that the plutonium and the cesium-137 and the strontium-90 and the uranium and so on, all of these yummies from the insanity that is Fukushima are drifting around the entire planet. It's not just the west coast of the United States. So I suggest strongly that people who are interested in the production of clean food and indeed possibly acquiring it for themselves wherever they might live, go to our principal website, which is Dr. Rima, truthreports.com, and add their name, their email address and first name to our mailing list. They will receive our Health Freedom Action e-alert newsletter and a whole bunch of useful things, ebooks and so on, that are very important. Now, in Chile, once we got here, we said, well, what is happening with UPAV? UPAV is an acronym for the intellectual property organism of the United Nations, which basically smashes small farmers and clean food flat in favor of, naturally, the globalist genetic modifiers and agrochemical producers and the general despoilers of our planetary food supply, the great multinational corporations, which, as you know, Vinny, are fusing daily more and more closely with the state.
May
and
I ask? That's true. I heard something, and I want to see if you know of this. I think it was Monsanto, I believe. They're lobbying so that GMO foods will be labeled as natural.
As organic.
Really?
Yes. The spineless, gutless, worthless regulators and Congress of the United States, of whom you can tell, I think, very highly, have no compunction pressing for a fusion of GMO, natural, and organic. Because after all, in their regulatory craziness, and they have an abundance of regulatory craziness, they believe, or they claim to believe, I know that they don't actually believe this because,
for example, how about we call it natural or manic?
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. How about we call it worse than fecal contamination?
I guess we could come up with a whole lot of labels.
We could. Mm. We could. So what they seem to believe is that since the scientifically illiterate George Bush Sr. Declared that genetically modified food and non-genetically modified food are, quote, substantially equivalent, a completely nonsensical designation, the FDA, which is forbidden to examine any scientific studies on safety or health concerns or any such things other than a preliminary study done by the holder of the patent, that's Monsanto or Pfizer and Syngenta. So they say, yeah, this is safe, honest. And the FDA, that's the Fraud and Death Administration, says, okay, well, you wouldn't lie to us. You wouldn't tell us it was safe if it weren't. So that constitutes our entire total sum of our safety investigation into this particular GMO. And since it can be patented and it's different enough to be an intellectual property, but the president back in 1994 said that it was substantially equivalent and therefore was the same as non-patentable food, well, okay, we'll call it natural. We'll call it organic, we'll call it profitable, we'll call it excellent at depopulation, And we won't look too closely at anything like science or reality. This is tragic for the planet. This is tragic for the human race. And so when I learned that Chile had put itself on the cusp of passing the UPOV 91 treaty, ratifying the treaty, which would turn Chile's agriculture into the same corporate disaster that the United States agriculture is, I said, oh, I don't really think so. And we pulled out the stops on U.S.-style social networking political activism. We created an action item in English and Spanish, and we asked people to click the submit button, and English-speaking people can go to tinyurl.com. The Spanish one is Salva, S-A-L-V-A, Semilla, S-E-M-I-L-L-A, Chilena, C-H-I-L-E-N-A. And the English one, I believe, is Save Chilean Seed. But and I'll check that as we're talking. But what happens when you click the submit button after entering your name and your email is that 68 people here in Chile receive an email saying, don't you dare. And because 3 million people out of a total population of 17.5 million people here in Chile, 3 million emails were sent using this U.S.-style activism. The Chilean Congress, instead of pushing it through as a shoe-in back in April, hasn't been able to pass it. Now, they have it on the ballot for Tuesday, January 7th, this week. And we have helped instigate marches and huge action campaigns using this action item. And it is possible, Vinny, that we will have pushed Monsanto and their evil twins, Pfizer and Syngenta and Bayer Crop Sciences and Dow. Dow, by the way, is pressuring the Fraud and Death Administration to approve 2,4-D resistant seeds so they can spray Agent Orange on the crops of the United States, and you'll eat food imbued with Agent Orange. Doesn't that sound delicious? So we think that we may be able to...
Well, it doesn't sound that delicious unless it was Agent Orange with chocolate chip.
Well, but the chocolate chip is genetically engineered in.
Oh, that's nice.
Everything, kale and okra with chocolate chip and Agent Orange, and a few birth defects along the way, and they're free. They don't charge you extra for the birth defects, for the cancer, for the genetic damage, which is permanent to you and any offspring that you might still be able to have. That you get free for nothing.
Well, that's just so generous of them.
They are. You know, they are all hard. And I want to remind people that in the European headquarters of Monsanto, the employees threatened to go on strike unless they stopped serving GMO food there and only served organic food. These were the insiders who knew whereof they ate.
It's funny you should mention that.
Yes, go ahead.
I was at a skeptics meeting. My sister took me, and they were talking about GMOs. You know, they had this, I don't know, maybe 22-year-old fresh out of university giving us a lecture on how great GMOs are and how little risk there is. And I mentioned that to her, that they don't serve GMO food in their cafeterias anymore. And one of these other skeptics went on their cell phone and smartphone, sorry, and did a little Google search for what I was talking about. And it came up with links from like Before It's News and other alternative media websites. And she said, "This is a skeptics meeting. Look at these websites. They're not credible." And I said, "Well, hold on. Are you saying that only mainstream media is credible and everything else is not. Is that what you're telling me? And I spoke to my sister about this later on, maybe even months and months after. And to her mind, that skeptic had shot me down.
Really?
Yeah. Like I was so totally wrong because my sources weren't mainstream media.
I hope you've had some conversation with your sister.
You know, she's kind of getting worse. I don't know. You know that position where you find yourself, where you start to kind of realize in only a tiny little way what's going on. You start asking people about chemtrails, you start asking and you start thinking, but you choose not to push the envelope. And you think to yourself, you know what? What I'm going to do is distract myself by working extra hard to pay off my debts and eat, smoke, and drink whatever I want. Right?
Uh-huh. Okay. How old is she, Vinny?
I think she's in like 40 now.
40. Okay. Usually by the time people are 40, they're eating and smoking and drinking anything they want. And living an unconscious life, their bodies are beginning to break down. And sometimes those diseases and conditions and aches and pains, sometimes those precipitate people into an awareness of saying, something's wrong here, and the drugs are just making me sicker. And maybe that thing that Vinny was saying actually bears looking at. You know, so sometimes the pathological aging process actually helps people along the road to consciousness, and I hope that that's the case for her.
Yeah. Well, the fear of death really helped me with my expansion of consciousness. Oh, my God, these people are trying to kill me with all their scumbaggery. Maybe I better learn something about it.
Maybe I ought to know why and how, and then maybe I ought to figure out how to do something about it. I want to change the topic a bit, if I may. Does that meet with your approval?
Almost everything that you do, Dr. Rima, meets with my approval because you're just so fabulous.
That's why I love to talk to you, because you say those things. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're probably the only person on the planet with that attitude, so I really appreciate that.
I am known for my uniquity.
Pardon me?
I am known for my uniquity.
Yes, yes, your uniquity.
I'm ubiquitous with my uniquities.
I think you are, and that's an O-U-S, so we're right on the same page.
It's like a heifer lump. All right.
It's like fabulous.
Mm. And, yes. And odious. I like that.
Certainly odious.
Mm-mm.
And
especially right now in the summer in New Zealand, you know, just, ooh, it's quite hot.
Actually, it's quite hot here, too. It was over 100 degrees for several days here.
Sweet mercy.
It's quite horrible.
Oh, can I share with you a brilliant scheme that I came up with on how to keep cool? You get your 1.5 liter bottle of water, and instead of keeping it in the fridge just to keep it cool or whatever, you actually put it in the freezer. And then once you take it out of the freezer to drink, it's just like a solid block of ice, right? It'll melt pretty quickly in the heat. So you can drink it, and then you can actually top it up with more water as you keep drinking it, and you've got this giant block of ice in there to keep you with fresh, freezing cold, cool water the whole day.
But it's really important not to do that in a plastic bottle.
I know. That's the problem. I'm trying to find glass bottles. I just can't freaking find them. They've practically been outlawed since the 70s. Unless it's liquor.
What I do when I'm traveling and I don't have a glass bottle handy from some other source that I've had in my kitchen, what I do is I buy some fizzy water that I would never think of putting in my body because of the negative health effects of carbonated water. I pour it out, and then I put filtered water into the screw-top glass bottle for Perrier or whatever brand overly priced, not too healthy water I've found on the supermarket shelves. And that way I get a glass bottle and I don't have to drink anything from plastic.
I've been looking around in the supermarkets and everything like that. No glass whatsoever in New Zealand. Can't find it. The only thing that's in glass is liquor.
Really?
So I'd have to spend like $40 on a bottle of liquor so I could drink my water out of it without getting poisoned. And ironically, I'd probably have to drink the liquor and poison myself in order to get the glass bottle empty, you know.
Or you could dump it into the toilet.
I'd prefer to drink it, honestly, you know.
I knew that. I knew that. I would dump it into the toilet. But that's a personal choice. So let me change the topic, if I may, to some scumbaggery of the most massive sort. This is so horrifying that I suggest everybody listening put their seatbelts on mentally and prepare for something that is mind-blowingly horrific that we have complete capacity to stop in its tracks.
Okay, give me a second to put my seatbelt on. All right.
You're okay? You mm-hmm. belted in?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because if we turn you upside down, we don't want you falling on your head.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. It is by now no secret that vaccines are worthless as a health prevention as a disease prevention and health promotion strategy. It is also by now no secret that vaccines are exceedingly dangerous, and that in our program on September 11th, 2013, we called autism an inside job, just like the World Trade attack, just like 9/11 was an inside job. And we talked about the fact that vaccines are being used in increasing numbers specifically because they cause neurological damage and they are producing the Delta workers that the corporate structure needs for its technicians mm-hmm. and people who do repetitive work. We've already talked about that, and people who want to know more about that are welcome to go to Dr. Rima Truth Reports and .com/autism, I'm sorry, Delta dash sign up. No, I got that wrong, Vinny. Delta-project.signup. And there is a lot of information available, free ebooks and videos and so on, to present that information to people. Now, you'd think that's pretty bad, and maybe as bad as it could get, to intentionally damage children for your own purposes, both to make them long-term patients with cancer and many, many other disorders, and to diminish their mental capacity and turn them into your drone workers. That's pretty nefarious and horrifying. It gets worse. What we've realized is that the entire concept of shaken baby syndrome, you know, where some caretaker, a babysitter, a parent, a grandparent gets annoyed with the infant, picks up the baby, shakes it so vigorously that the vessels in its brain tear and the baby is either permanently damaged or dies. Now, I can tell you that such things do happen. They happen occasionally, and as a psychiatrist, a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist, I have worked with some of the craziest and most destructive types of parents or caretakers in the world. But when a baby is damaged in that way, you get telltale signs. You get damage to the retina. You get external markings. You get various physiological indications of what has happened to the baby. You get damage to the muscles and the vertebrae of the neck, for example. And such people usually have a history of abusing children, dogs, neighbors. They're not loving, kind, pacific people. They're pretty scary people who have once again damaged a baby. That's very rare. But what we have is an epidemic, and I do mean an epidemic, of loving, kind, concerned people who are being sent to jail for life, for the murder of their babies in a way that is physiologically impossible. These people are being sent to jail without having their expert witnesses being allowed in the court. They're being sent to jail with their lawyers not allowing them on the stand to testify in their own behalf. And they're being sentenced to extreme sentences, life in prison, for example. So not only do they lose their baby, but they lose their lives to this draconian justice system. Well, why? And the answer is very simple: to keep the vaccine fraud going. Because if it were known what the real cause of supposed shaken baby syndrome is, no one would vaccinate children unless they wished to abuse them. No one would vaccinate themselves unless they were out of their minds. No one. So this is critically important. And what we say is that the best way to protect your health and stay out of jail as a parent is to not vaccinate the baby. Now, this is such a problem. It's a problem in the UK. It's a problem in Australia. It's a problem in New Zealand, in the United States, in Canada, in France. It's a problem anywhere children are vaccinated, because children die in increased numbers when they're vaccinated. And if it's not the vaccines at fault, then it's going to be the parents or the babysitter. To keep the vaccine fraud alive just a few trillion dollars longer. So on February 5th, the Natural Solutions Foundation is convening a webinar, which we've created with the excellent help of Christina England. Christina has written a 14,000-word ebook that people who register for the webinar will receive without any charge. And we'll be holding a 2-hour discussion with world experts from all sectors of the globe talking about this. It is of vital importance, Vinny, that we stop vaccinating each other. We stop vaccinating ourselves. And to do that, you have to get an exemption. And that's not fun. And it's difficult, but it can be done, and it's life-saving. And if you have a young child and you're vaccinating that child, you are playing roulette not only with the child's life, but with your own, because you may wind up in jail for the rest of your life. The vaccine fraud people will go to any lengths. They are shameless. They are dangerous. They are disgusting. They are distressing. They control the mainstream media. So to people who believe that that's where the truth lies, of course, none of this makes sense. But this is a matter of extreme importance. You cannot physically shake a baby in the way that people are being accused of having done and kill the baby. It's just not possible.
Indeed. And I recall a conversation I had with my soon-to-be mother-in-law. She's a health practitioner, has been was working as a nurse in South Africa for 25 plus years, and then moved to New Zealand and started practicing nursing here. And had a conversation with her about vaccines, and she's calling me crazy and all of these things, and nothing I say is true. And then I asked her, can you name me one ingredient in any vaccine? One ingredient, just one. Blank face. She's been vaccinating people for 30 years, and she had no idea what a single ingredient was. And I said, okay, well, let me inform you. Thimerosal, which is 50% mercury. That's in some vaccines. Oil and water.
It's 49, Vinny, it's 49.7% mercury.
Okay, but now we're just getting into the semantics. And then there was also the aborted fetal cells. They abort a fetus?
Those.
They abort a fetus?
Yes.
cut that unborn child's body open, slice out the organs, grow viruses on them, and then pop it, along with their red blood cells, into a vaccine and inject it directly into your bloodstream, bypassing your skin and your digestive system, which is supposed to protect you from that kind of stuff happening, right? And what else have we got in there? Oh, oil and water adjuvants. Weren't they linked to Gulf War syndrome? Of course they were. You know, just looking at any ingredient in a vaccine, and the conclusion becomes obvious.
How about the formaldehyde?
Yeah.
How about the formaldehyde?
Indeed. And, well, my point is that you can look at any ingredient in a vaccine, and this is the reason why nobody who promotes vaccines has any idea what even a single ingredient in them is because every single ingredient in there, with the vaccines, you would have to conclude that they are a biological weapon, and nothing less.
And indeed they are. And that is the point. That is the point. They are a biological weapon. I will remind your listeners that in 1922, Bertrand Russell, a Fabian socialist, a depopulationist, a eugenicist, and a supremacist, a person who believed that he and his ilk were God granted the right to be the rulers of the planet. Bertrand Russell, who was also a mathematician and a philosopher, wrote that through diet, injunction, and injection, it would become impossible for the ordinary man to form an independent thought. How about that? How about that? And vaccine, diet, injunction, that's poisoned food that has a tremendous effect on your brain or lack thereof. Injunction is education and socialization and injection. That is the intended goal. And if people die along the way, well, so much the better. And if they become infertile and if they become autistic, how much more better can it get? Because then we can employ them at shameful disabled person rates in essentially slavery. They're docile and they're replaceable. If they stop being docile, you just get rid of them and plug another one in. This is the Brave New World model, and injections are very much a part of it. Some children will die. This is collateral damage or a benefit if you're a depopulationist. And if you're a parent and you're vaccinating your children, you're playing roulette with your life and theirs. Wake up. Wake up. This is a bioweapon.
Now, if you have a world full of people who are, I wouldn't say uneducated, I would say we're miseducated, okay, to believe everything is the opposite of what it actually is. Okay, vaccines are a bioweapon. Okay, well, we'll tell the people that it helps them and that they need herd immunity and that if anybody doesn't get vaccinated, that's dangerous, all right? Well, in actual fact, it's obviously the complete opposite. Anybody who does get vaccinated, it's dangerous. We live in an opposite world. It's a very unfortunate phenomenon, but it is nonetheless true. And the two general assumptions of life that I have is, number one, if it comes from a source of some form of officialdom, that's probably the direct opposite of whatever they're telling you it is. And number two, if you can't make it yourself, either by growing it or manufacturing it in your kitchen, then it's a soft-kill bioweapon. These two general assumptions. Yeah. And these of course aren't the absolute rules. These are just assumptions that have little, you know, hips and things and things that might be wrong with them. But in general, yeah.
Well, and the exceptions are rather interesting. For example, I cannot make or grow an airplane, and that does not mean that an airplane is a soft kill bioweapon. But
They are used to spray them on us.
They are being used as the dispersal system for soft care bioweapons. So one step removed from the literal truth, yes, exactly.
In fact, they actually literally are being used to spray soft kill bioweapons now. Australia, I believe, is now going to use unmanned aerial vehicles to spray an aerosol vaccine on certain states.
What a great idea. And what against supposedly the disease that this vaccine will protect us against is what?
I don't know. Being healthy, I guess that's probably classified as a disease now.
I think so. Being fertile, being healthy, being unmolested, that probably is
maybe
what, you know.
Maybe people still have cognitive function in that part of Australia, and that's why they're doing it.
Well, we have to get rid of that, don't we?
I mean, if people are healthy, can think, and are fertile, they're just the enemies of humanity.
Absolutely. Because they might lean close and listen. Ask questions. They might ask questions. And we certainly couldn't have that now, could we?
No. Well, we could have questions, but we'll just dodge all the answers. In fact, a friend of mine last night I was speaking with, he watched a video, a UK interviewer, and he was interviewing a politician. You know, when you ask a direct question with an honest person, you get a direct answer, but with a politician, you get a waffle, all right, or a pancake. And he seems to enjoy sitting there interviewing this person, because when he says one of those little answers that detract from the issue.
Hello?
Or do... Oh, can you hear me?
I'm sorry, I lost you for a moment. Please go ahead.
Okay. Whenever the politician would say something that wasn't a direct answer or tend to waffle and go off to the side, a little electric shock would go on the interviewer. Okay, the interviewer would actually go, ow, 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 and the politician will go, what's happening to you? And he goes, I'm sorry, that's just my bullshit detector. Go on, keep talking.
That's funny.
I thought that was quite brilliant, you know.
I think that's wonderful. That's wonderful. What are the people in the area where Australia intends to spray an involuntary medical experiment planning on doing about this?
Oh, I think they're resisting it in every way that they can. And in fact, this same person I was just referring to who told me that story about the BS meter was the person who told me about this. And what occurs to me is that they're doing it on certain states at a time. So, for example, they're going to start along with Queensland, I think, as one of the seven states of Australia, New Zealand being the seventh. And essentially what's going to happen is they're going to roll over and take on one state at a time. That way they don't have an entire nation's resistance against it, so that they can just roll over people one at a time, divide and conquer, divide and spray.
Of course, divide and spray. That's what a wonderful system.
Well, it's a perfected system, isn't it?
Isn't it? Now, I understand this involuntary vaccination has been going on in the United States, for example. And it's
really?
Not clear exactly.
Really?
Yes, really. And it's not clear exactly what disease or condition we are being protected against.
One would think that it's not necessarily to protect your health from any particular disease or condition, but to indeed manufacture a response that manifests itself as a disease and condition, thereby justifying them spraying you in the first place.
Why, Vinny, what a very cynical and unpatriotic view.
My bad.
Wow.
I mean,
after all, would the state do that to us? Would the state harm us? Would the state create disease for objectives and agendas that are not actually good for us? Oh, surely not. Not the state in which you and I live.
Well, the state is, in my opinion, much like a hurricane. And indeed, when you're preparing for a hurricane, you expect the worst and hope for the best. The unfortunate thing is government no longer gives you any hope. So you just expect the worst, and it always comes.
I can't think of anything that the government does for me that I really wanted to do at this point. Can you?
There was a year where I was on a benefit, a sickness benefit, for depression, which there was no blood test for or any actual doctor's proper diagnosis. I love that. You can just come in, start crying, and say, I'm low on money, and they diagnose you, and then you get money for a whole year from the government, for which I funded my operation to set up a media apparatus in New Zealand to criticize the government with. I actually enjoyed that. But
did it cure your depression?
Had I not, the thing is, the depression went away as soon as the first paycheck come in, because when you're stressed, it's often because of money, isn't it? If you've got no money whatsoever, yes, it's quite easy to become depressed. So it's a monetary thing. It's like, cure my depression, here's some money. Hey, it's gone.
And you were able to stay on that particular program for a year?
1 year, and then they bumped me off it and put me on an unemployment benefit, which is different from a sickness benefit, but not before they asked me to come in and reapply and do this, that, and the other. And they said to me, I have to come in to the office in order to collect any kind of benefit at a specific time. A time in which, incidentally, was the only time that I had my radio show going, and there was no negotiation, and I was either going to get a benefit or I was going to have a career in radio. I think I made the correct choice, and for the last 6 years, I've been 100% either self-funded or funded by my listeners and supporters, and the government no longer has that benefit for me.
There are a lot of places where you have listeners where there would be no such benefit. And so the stress would go on and on. And the conservatives would say, well, we're running a fiscally responsible society, and the suffering would just continue for those people who truly needed help. And that's one of the things that I think is important to remember, that there are things that a government can do and should do to support those who are, in fact, in need of support. And when wealthy, self-satisfied people say, well, we have no responsibility, those people who are on food stamps, just cut the food stamps. Those people who are on public assistance programs, we'll show them who's boss. Let's just cut their benefits. And if children starve, or if people experience extreme suffering, well, hey, you know, there's a free market out there, and we don't care about the consequences in human terms. If they were any good at life, they would be making money. This is a very dangerous attitude.
I have noticed this attitude amongst the wealthy, and I come from a wealthy upbringing, and that ended when I was 10 years old, pretty much, and I do have still quite a few wealthy relatives, and what I have noticed is that with obscene amounts of money comes skewed morality. That's basically what I've concluded in a lot of cases. There are some cases where people have made money honestly and have managed to keep their keep an even keel and not let it go to their head. But in general, I see a general callous nature a lack of caring. Everybody else has to do well by themselves. I did well by myself, therefore you should be able to do well by yourself. Doesn't matter the fact that I started off with a head start. Doesn't matter if I started off near the finish line and you had to start all the way from the bottom. That doesn't matter. Everybody's the exact same. If you've got the stars in the sky, you can become a genius multimillionaire like me, right? Just by looking into the sky somehow. Doesn't matter how you were raised. Doesn't matter what benefits you have. Doesn't matter. Okay? It doesn't matter. That's the attitude. I don't care about anybody else but myself. Because I am successful and they are not. And that's their fault, not mine, for stealing all their money off them.
You know, it's a very Calvinist attitude. John Calvinist came up with a rather astonishing idea that the richer you were, the more favored you were by a generous God. And the poorer you were, the less favored you were by a generous God. And therefore, the elect who were going to go to heaven could be sort of scoped out by seeing who was rich. And it didn't matter what you did, because once God had sort of put his thumb on your head and said, you are a member of the elect, you're going to heaven, you could behave as horribly as you like to other people or to the planet or to, you know, anybody you liked. And you were still going to heaven. So what we're talking about is sort of Darwinian Calvinism minus the theology.
You know, it's very funny that you mention that, because I had a conversation with I guess what I would call a neo-Nazi before this conversation with you, utterly convinced that the Jews are behind everything, that they all need to be rounded up and put into Israel and then basically nuked, right? And that all the people of German descent around the entire world need to be exported back to Germany or the America. He was basically talking about sort of like a neo-nationalist. It's just nuts, right? Like I'm just sitting here looking at what this guy is saying about racial purity and all of these kind of, and the thing that happened to me while, during that conversation, and the thing that you just mentioned, Darwinian, right? Survival of the fittest. I don't give a frack about anything else. It's the jungle out there, and I'm the king of the jungle, so I will run it how I please.
And the more immoral I am, the more king of the jungle-y I get. So there's a self-reinforcing amorality. Mm-hmm. Here, it's very much like the vaccinologists. It's a self-reinforcing craziness. The more harm we do, the more vaccines we need to give.
Mm. It's like a perpetual scumbaggery device. In fact, there was a study at Berkeley University. I want to share this with you, Dr. Raymond. I think you'll like this. About the acquisition of money. Now, they got a whole bunch of random people, some wealthy, some poor or whatever, and they played games of Monopoly with them. Now, what they did was they skewed the rules of the Monopoly so that one person would be overly advantaged, okay? Like, as in, there's no possibility that they could lose. And what was funny is that all of them, wealthy or not, managed to turn into some form of douchebag in the course of the game. They were rude to the other players. They snapped at them and demanded things. You know, give me that, you know. That was what was very interesting. And another part of the study concerned a pedestrian study. So you got a crosswalk across the street. You got a pedestrian waiting to cross. What kind of cars don't stop to allow you to walk across? Expensive European cars driven by wankers, right? Excessive money turns you into a dick, okay? In the main. If you have, on the other hand, I would like to know, Dr. Raymond, do you know anybody that is really, really wealthy who actually is still a really incredibly decent human being who does work for charity, like an actual charity that isn't just a front for some form of scumbaggery? I can't name one.
I know one person, and I know a lot of people. I know one person who comes from one of the wealthiest families that spring to mind instantly when you think of wealthy families, globalist wealthy families. That's the last name. And this lady has decided she didn't want to live in that world, and she has attempted to fund with her wealth to fund things. The same things that you and to live like a regular person. And she's also attempted to be the conscience of her family. So there are quite a number of heirs to the enormous fortune, which keeps getting bigger. And so she called them together at least one time. And she said, do you realize that we have the resources to heal this planet? Why don't we? Why don't we stop doing this and this and this and start doing that and that and that? And this one woman, I of course was not at the meeting, but what I understand is that all the cousins and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters looked at her and said, essentially, you need your meds adjusted.
I can solve the world's problems. I can solve the world's problems. I can literally save the world. We can literally save the world. We have the resources and the ability to do it. And that is insane, just wanting to do it to these people.
Just
because
wanting to do it, yes.
Now, does that mean that they've all been driven insane at some point in their life? Is there recovery from insanity? Perhaps they're not eating the right foods. Perhaps they haven't suffered enough at the hands of the state, for example. Perhaps they've been living high on the hog for so long that they forget that there are still people underneath the pig's trotters as they walk along.
Perhaps they are living high on us and they think we're the hog.
You do make a good point.
One of the most important philosophers in terms of my understanding of the world was Martin Buber. Martin Buber wrote a book called I and Thou. And what he said has certainly proved to be a kind of guiding principle for me, Vinny, and that is that when we incorporate other people into the people that we care about, when we see them as part of I, then we can't hurt them, we can't abuse them, we can't turn away from their suffering because they're like dearly beloved parts of ourselves. When we externalize them, we make them different from ourselves and we push them away and say they're not really the same as we are. We feel, but they don't. We care about our children, but they don't. We matter, but they don't. When they become the other, then we can do anything in the world to them, and it doesn't matter to us because we've dehumanized them. Of course, parenthesis, by doing so, we have ultimately dehumanized ourselves in the most powerful and cataclysmic way possible. Mm. But that is how we split ourselves off from ourselves, because when we stop seeing the other person as connected to us at some fundamental, essential level, then we can do anything we want. They don't matter.
You know, that was actually one of the points that was raised in this conversation I had with this Nazi beforehand. He said to me that the current methodologies that we're using of morality, of being good and what have you, aren't working to defeat the evil New World Order scumbags, so therefore we need to be just as evil as them in order to defeat them. It's insane.
Why do I have the feeling that I've heard that before?
Exactly. And I said to him, look, if you want to be good, it's about restraint. If you want to be evil, it's about a lack of restraint. You cannot do what evil people do and be good. It's not frickin' possible.
And he said,
I don't recall. I think that was about the end of the conversation because it occurred to me that this conversation was over and it wasn't going anywhere. And I knew who he was and what he thought about humanity. And he didn't think highly of it. He didn't feel as though it was worth helping. He only felt as though they were subhumans. Everything, everybody, was basically subhuman to him.
What a poor, pathetic creature. What a poor, pathetic creature. But understanding that he is a poor, pathetic creature doesn't mean that power shouldn't be taken out of his hands because he's frigging nuts.
Yeah. And again, that's what good is about. It's about taking power away, I think. Or if you are using power, to use it with absolute restraint. Lots and lots of it, you know. Let's say, for example, you have the ability to kill people. You are armed with a weapon. I know...
Or you're a licensed physician.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I'm talking about more like, say, gun owners, for example. I know a couple gun owners in New Zealand, and I've spoken with them at length about the weapons that they possess and how they operate them and what they do with them and their attitude in general. And they are so utterly restrained, never gung-ho in anything. Like they don't even load their weapons at home because it's illegal, right? It's illegal to have a loaded weapon in your home in this country. They are absolutely 100% paranoid at all times and operate with extraordinary restraint. Restraint that would be borderlining on virtual insanity. And I think that's actually the insanity of being a good person, because we live in an insane world, don't we? So obviously we're the good ones, therefore we're the crazy ones.
Well, the establishment defines sanity and insanity. And when you violate the strictures that allow the establishment to maintain its power, then you will instantly be either criminalized or marginalized or both. So this is also nothing new. In the Soviet world, under the Stalinists, any dissenting thought became a psychosis. And
yes, these poor people are insane. They don't believe in communism. Let's send them for re-education. That'll help them.
Exactly. And let's use drugs and let's do experiments on them. And I remember when I was a young psychiatrist, I was totally involved in the anti-Soviet psychiatry campaigns in the United States. And now the United States psychiatry establishment is doing exactly the same thing, criminalizing, doing chemical lobotomies of people who are asking questions, doing shock therapy against people. And it's not for, it's against people who are inconvenient.
And incidentally... the United States government imported the former heads of the KGBs and former runners of gulags in order to set up the United States systems in the NSA.
That's exactly right.
You can't make this stuff up. Now, let's go to break just briefly, and we'll be back in just a minute or so. My very special guest is Dr. Rima Labo from the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. We'll be back momentarily for a quick wrap-up.
Strolling down the streets, I feel that the time is flying in past me so fast, I don't think I'll catch up with it. As politicians selling me out of my country, I've got an inkling that don't care about me in the summer. City, when those girls are so pretty, they distract me from all the important things as I get sold quietly into slavery in the summer. Yeah, in the city, where the girls are so pretty. Smiles in the
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is the, I was going to say innocuous, as in inoculated, from Scumbaggery, Dr. Rima Labo from the Dr. Rima Labo truthreports.com. Now, in order to wrap this up, we started off, we're talking about Chile and the GMO food agenda, then we went on to vaccines and then on to psychopathy, and then basically we're talking about the very essence of what good is and the very essence of what evil is. And I wanted to know what your perspective. You consider yourself good? I know that you do, because you actually do good things. It's trees by their fruits. Anybody can say they're good or say that they're evil, but it's their actions that truly define them. May I ask, what is your piece of advice for people who are perhaps, I don't know, on the fence a little bit? They're neither. They're accepting evil and hope that good does something, but I don't think that makes you good, just hoping for it. You got to do something.
I think it just hoping for good makes you a tool of what is evil, and it makes you complicit so that ultimately you become transmuted and you become part of the evil. Let me tell you a personal story, Vinny. I was living about an hour north of New York City. I had a lovely home in a perfectly wonderful community. I was able to travel and ski and do what I wanted to do financially, because I had a wonderful medical practice of drug-free medicine, and people came to me quite literally from all over the world because I was able to help them actually get well from conditions that they were supposed to die from. And it was a wonderful experience. I was working on a daily basis with my husband, General Stubblebine, and we were having a great time. And I became aware more and more deeply of the evil, the genocide, the plans, the plots, the conspiracies that we talk about now in an open kind of way. Well, at that time, nobody was talking about it in an open kind of way. And one day I marched into the office that we shared and I said to my husband, "We have to close the practice." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, because we, the health freedom side, are losing every single battle because nobody is thinking strategically and acting tactically. And if we don't do something about it, because we're good at strategic and tactical planning and execution, if we don't do something about it, then we become part of the genocidal evil. And I cannot live like that." He said, "Neither can I." We closed our practice. We sold our home. We created the Natural Solutions Foundation. Now, if you look on the internet, you will find that we work for the CIA. We are pharmaceutical shills. We are, reptilians. We are, all the bad things that you could possibly say about somebody. And it's all, nonsense. But we chose to follow our inner message of what was good, not what was convenient, in order to make things right for us all, not just protect our own little life and try to keep our heads down and keep our income up and pretend that it wasn't happening. We saw what was happening and we decided that we had no choice but to devote our lives to making it right. That seems to me like a good thing to do.
I believe that this is pretty similar to my experience. It's not like we really made a choice. It's like we had a lack of options. It's like, can I keep my head down for a little while, maybe enjoy a little bit of fruits, and then wind up getting subsequently enslaved or exterminated, literally. I can't do that. I don't have an option. That's not an option, is it? I don't think being enslaved and exterminated is going to be good for my health.
One of the interesting things that people need to remember is that when you capitulate and you play the game and you go along and you become a capo or a trusted tool of the oppressing system, the first thing they do as soon as they get where they want to go, as soon as they have control, is they exterminate you, because you were willing to sell your principles very cheaply just for a little bit of comfort and some apparent safety, and willing to do really terrible things to other people. So they know your character and they don't trust you. And every tyranny eliminates its capos as soon as they don't need them.
The Praetorian, I think, was the analogy. The ones who actually really guarded the royalty, they're the first to go in any revolution. You know,
exactly.
Well, any successful revolution, anyway. If it was an unsuccessful revolution, they wind up getting killed in the process of revolting. But you know, now today in our modern society, I think we are faced by a psychological challenge: bravery. Bravery has been bred out of the human race and has been replaced with slavery. And it's good. It's easy. It's an easy transition because it rhymes. You know, have I got bravery? No, you've got slavery. Oh, okay. Well, they sound similar. Well, yeah, I'll just accept that. And, you know, I've got this really, aggressive, borderlining on psycho streak within me that is just so angry. I actually have the urge to maim and hurt and kill these scumbaggery individuals that afflict me and everybody else, but I restrain myself from doing so for knowing that the consequences will be I have the exact same thing happen to me. And so you're constrained by those limitations. And as a creative person, and all human beings have the creative capacity, as Picasso said, every child is a born artist. The key is to remain an artist as you grow up. Without getting hammered out of you, really, there are ways. There are ways and means. There has to be a way. How could we be alive without a possibility of freedom? All right. That's kind of like how the church sort of sees it, you know. How could I be alive if not for God? And I have a very similar kind of viewpoint to that. I'm here. There must be a purpose. There must be something good that can come from it. It is not all dark and evil. Not all is lost. All right. And some people do say that all is lost and they've lost their hope. And I'd like to say to them this: take a breath with me. You know why all is not lost? For there is still breath in your body.
Indeed. Let me ask you a question. If you could live without freedom and hope of freedom, would you want to?
Don't know. Honestly, I'd have to cross that bridge when I burn it.
I think it's a very important question. What's really worth living and dying for? And each of us has to ask that question to become fully human. And we can change our answers as we go forward.
Yeah.
But I think that's an internal dialogue that it's essential to have, unless you want to become or remain a drone, just somebody who fulfills another purpose besides your own. If that's what you want, then I don't know, are you really alive?
Are you really thinking? Do you even know what's going on? Because I think it's like there's a scene in The Matrix where the architect, I think it's in The Matrix 2, and the architect tells Neo that the only reason why people accept the program is because they're given a choice, even if they're only aware of the choice on a very subconscious level. And I believe that this is really the crux of the analogy of The Matrix, this whole prison that's being pulled over our eyes to blind us from the truth that we're slaves, right? Is we're given a choice, but we're not aware that we were given a choice, but we've already made it, and then we have to understand why we made it. There's also this all part of this philosophical debate within the Matrix trilogy, and I think it really does come down to that in this reality that we're living in. And my great concern is the group of people out there who deny the existence of reality itself. Literally, there are people who say that reality doesn't exist. That nothing exists.
You know, there are people, human beings are so amazingly creative in the ways they stick their neurons together and the ways they stick their neurotransmitters and then they stick their experiences and they stick their expectations and projections on them together. Really astoundingly complex and diverse. There is pretty much nothing stupid that you could say that somebody doesn't say. And I say that as a psychiatrist. Pretty much nothing idiotic that somebody doesn't adhere to as the basis of their reality.
Including, my reality is that there is no reality. That's ironic.
Well, you know, there is a an interlocking set of shifting realities, which we actually do influence with our expectations and intentionalities and so on. And then there's the reality that we don't influence. And the interplay between them is very complicated. But we have to act as if there's a reality, or we wind up either paralyzed or just excusing ourselves for taking no responsibility.
Actually, that's exactly the same justification that I have for having a belief in a higher being, in a higher self, is because the alternative of not believing in it actually weakens you. Right, like in Vietnam, for example, in the POW camps, they found that those with a very strong belief in God invariably would survive being interned with no hope of escape. And those who were atheists, who had no belief in a higher power, when they were locked in that cell, they were locked in that cell completely and utterly alone. And that's why I have a belief in a spiritual power. Not because I necessarily absolutely believe in a spiritual power and can define it and so on and so forth, but because I know that not having it means that I'll die a lot easier. Much like if I deny reality, the same consequence will come about, don't you think? And Ayn Rand once said in the 50s, you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
One of the few things that I would wholeheartedly agree with that she said.
Now, I think we've come to a very nice and exciting end to a wonderful broadcast. I want to thank you, Dr. Rima, for coming on. And the website is drrematruthreports.com. drrematruthreports.com, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see any more of her amazing, very good, and practical work. You know, that's what I love about you. Is it's not just all up in the sky, hairy fairy. It's kind of like hands on. This knowledge can be applied and work.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Benny. I really love being on the show with you. And let me just quickly spell that. It's drrimatruthreports.com.
And those links.
The conversation.
You're welcome. And those links will be up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com when we post the archives, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening.